This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting,
lightsaber clashing,
the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping,
banshee flying,
space mountain launching,
galaxy rewinding,
what the necklace galaxy rewinding,
fireworks igniting,
world of other worlds, for whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
If you've listened to this show for a while, you know that if there's one tool I absolutely cannot live without, it's the Onyx Hunt app. I use Onyx year-round to mark spots, find new properties, access landowner information, and so much more. But throughout the year, I tend to use the app differently depending on what I'm doing. Right now, I'm always using it to double-check stream bank easements in the Driftless. And when I'm not doing that, I'm using the slope angle layer to look for pinch points or little knobs that a buck might be betting on. And of course, when I'm in the field scouting, the tracker feature is running at all times to paint a picture of how things move throughout a property. To learn more about all the other features that Onyx offers, head over to onyxmaps.com. We all know there's nothing worse than being cold and wet while you're trying to pursue your favorite game. That's why I trust Huntworth with all my hunting outerwear needs. This past fall was the warmest and driest I've ever been throughout an entire hunting season, and that's all thanks to Huntworth's heat boost technology and the DWR waterproof finish on their clothing. I've been wearing the Durham lightweight pants almost every time I hit the field, whether I'm chasing whitetails, busting brush for pheasants, or doing some postseason scouting, and you'd better believe that these things will be my go-to for turkey season as well, thanks to the waterproof seat and knee panels paired with the lightweight, breathable body. I'll probably rock the Grayling hoodie for the early season and eventually transition to the Fallon lightweight shirt when the hot late season starts, and all that's going to be in their Tarnan pattern, which I have absolutely fallen in love with over this past year. Go build your kit today at huntworthgear.com or visit the sporting goods section of your local Farm and Fleet or Fleet Farm to check it out in person. Southwest Wisconsin is home to one of the most unique trout fisheries in the country, with thousands of miles of spring-fed streams twisting their way through valleys, pastures, and prairies. And one of the best ways to experience this fishery is with a fly rod in hand. Good Chance Fly Fishing is your guide to all that the Driftless has to offer, whether you're an experienced angler or you're just looking to try something new and get into fly fishing. To find more info and book your trip, visit goodchanceflyfishing.com. If you've listened to this show before, I'm sure you've noticed that if there's one thing that keeps coming up over and over again, it's the importance of public lands and waters. Shoot, I'd venture to guess that 90% of what we talk about on this show takes place on public lands. We all love the challenges we face and the memories we create in these wild places, and we need folks who are in our corner to protect them as well. That's why we're proud to have partnered with the good folks over at the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. The Wisconsin BHA Chapter was formed to provide a voice for hunters and anglers throughout Wisconsin that want to protect our public land legacy, and everyone involved worked their tails off to protect public lands and access to those public lands and waters. To stay informed on all things public lands, the issues facing our public lands, policies that might affect them, and to cross paths with some of the coolest outdoorsmen out there, I highly encourage you to join the Wisconsin Chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, or at least the chapter of whatever state you live in. Also, be on the lookout for our Wisconsin Public Land Policy bonus episodes to keep you all in the loop on the legal side of conservation and how things get done here in Wisconsin. To join BHA, visit backcountryhunters.org/join, and to learn more about what's going on here in the Badger State, visit backcountryhunters.org/Wisconsin. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Wisconsin Sportsman Podcast. I'm your host, Pierce Nellis, and this is your home for all things hunting, fishing, and conservation in the Badger State. Folks, I hope you're doing great. I hope the start of summer is treating you well. We've had some great weather so far. Fish are biting. I've been getting on some really good smallmouth bites in the afternoons here lately. And that's been kind of filling my evenings after work and stuff whenever I've had a couple hours to spare. But whatever you're doing, folks, I hope you're doing well and enjoying it. I don't know, I've been thinking about doing some camping in the next couple weeks maybe, but we'll see what the schedule allows. I'm for sure going to be knocking around on the Wisconsin River with Craig Amaker, who you guys heard from a couple weeks ago. We're going to do our annual canoe float on the Wisconsin and scout things out there and, you know, do a little bit of sandbar hopping and try and harass some smallmouth and stuff in the process. But I'm looking forward to that, and I hope you guys have some fun stuff on your agenda too. I've got Alec Beckers with me, the chair for the Wisconsin chapter of Wisconsin Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. You know him, you love him, you wish his mustache was almost as good as mine. But Alec, I'm happy to have you, buddy. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. I appreciate the reminder that this is the max my facial hair will ever reach. But it's been a busy time. I'm a little jealous that you get to spend more time in the outdoors than I have been and will be able to this summer. But, you know, got to put food on the table. Yep. And work that pesky day job that allows me to...
I feel you, dude.
Well, volunteer my time for things like BHA. Short-lived.
After next week, we start our build for our first machine, our first prototype, I guess, for sale. And so I'm fully prepared for shit to completely hit the fan and for me to not see my fly rods for a while, aside from guide trips. So we'll see what happens there. But, dude, before we dive into anything here, you know, you, through BHA, we're well-connected with Onyx. Onyx Hunt is a proud partner of our show, and I'm really excited. I have to mention this before we dive into the episode too far here, that one of the new partners of our show, I guess not new, sort of new, is the Onyx Fish app. Now, folks, if you haven't heard about this, it is all the glorious features that you experience through the Onyx Hunt app, but it's geared specifically towards lakes, ponds, and some rivers. Now, it's only available, it's still kind of in beta testing, so it's only available in, I believe, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, so you'll find, like, Onyx Fish Midwest. But, folks, if you're some guy who spends a lot of time on the lakes, and you like finding fish, and you like dropping pins, I'm sure you're already using Onyx Hunt for your fishing, just like I am, but I highly encourage you to go check out the Onyx Fish app. I was blown away by it. There is a ridiculous quantity of information out there. They incorporate a lot of fish surveys and creel surveys from the DNR, and honestly, something I was a little a little uncertain about, but I'm still not sure how I feel about it, really. They kind of hotspot certain areas in that they'll actually be preset pins on a lake that you can click, and you'll say site 17, and it'll tell you, hey, tends to be an abundance of pike, perch, and bluegill in here, or whatever it may be. Could be largemouth, whatever species, and it'll even give you some information on what the size trends tend to be as well as abundance. So, ton of information out there. Use it how you will. Use some discretion with it, and don't let the computer do all your thinking for you. But definitely go check it out if you're going to be hitting the lake this summer. But with that, Alex, you mentioned you've been working a bunch. You mentioned you got, before we started recording, you said you got out and fished at least one time this year. Do you have any anything fun on the horizon here this coming summer?
This summer, I'm probably going to end up doing some fishing with my buddy Quinn, who decent. Just picked up a sweet new John boat. It's getting pretty good. I will say that I will use Onyx Fish. I have used it. I will continue to use it because I don't know if you've ever fished with Quinn, but he's a very experienced angler who says all the wrong things and constantly leads me astray. And I can give the personal testimony that this past ice fishing season, every time I went to a spot that Quinn told me to go to, skunked. Absolutely skunked. Every time I went to a spot that I researched through Onyx Fish, crushed it. So you tell me, what is the better source of information? Friend Quinn or Onyx Fish? And I may have to start, using that information and funneling it to Quinn, say like, have we ever checked out this spot?
I feel like from the stories sentence and say, what's the better source of information, Quinn or fill in the blank? And the answer is almost always going to be fill in the blank based off of the stories that you've told me.
Well, we've all got that friend that you can always rely on them to give you a piece of information, and then you take that piece of information and do the exact opposite. When it comes to hunting and fishing, I'll just keep it at locations for now. Quinn's that friend that go here, do that. I'm doing the opposite. It was actually pretty funny. If anybody listened to the podcast we did with Quinn last fall about our elk hunting experience in Colorado, where another one of our friends had to get helicopter evacuated. Long story short of that trip was nobody shot an elk. And fast forward a few months later, I was actually getting my 2023 buck scored, and I was talking to the guy, and he had all these, the scorer, and he had all these elk shoulder mounts. And I was like, we just got back from Colorado. We were in unit 54. And he's like, that's where all of these elk were taken. And I said, where in 54 were you, generally speaking? Like, this is where we were. And the location that he said was exactly where I wanted to go originally. And Quinn had determined before we ever got there that it wasn't the right spot. We weren't going to do it. It was too easy access. Every excuse in the book. And on the drive home from getting it scored, my wife was with me, and I called Quinn, put it on speaker, and I said, "Hey, Allison, where did that guy shoot all those elk?" She said, "Oh, unit 54. And where in unit 54? And she says the location that Quinn would immediately know is the spot he chose to not go to. So, not only have I triangulated this with my personal experiences, but there's other people that I can point to say all of us agree that Quinn's assessment of any location
is a tough position to be in, man. That, I mean, now we can't rag on Quinn completely, right? Because if there's anything the guy has, it's a motor, right? Like, he is the dude. You even said it. I think you both said it in that episode we did in the fall. If you want to go try something, if you want to dive into some weird, mucky hellhole of a marsh that might just maybe hold ducks, Quinn's the guy to go with you. He's always down for it. But yeah, that's tough. You might have to have a little intervention with him or something, or I don't know. Maybe we'll get him back on the show just to Dr. Phil his ass and see if he'll dial back the game calls, I guess.
Hey, as much of a hard time as I give Quinn, I will still 12 times out of 10 pick going out with Quinn and getting Absolutely. Skunked over sitting at my desk and doing work. You know, bad day of hunting or Definitely. Hunt or fishing is always better than a good day of work. So he is out there and he's doing it far more than I am. So I'll just give him a hard time, but at the end of the day, Absolutely, he's still dude. Putting Absolutely. In the miles.
Man, I didn't expect to go off on a Quinn train there. That was that was unexpected. Hey, it must have been just weighing on your chest.
I didn't
either. Still got a little residual resentment, maybe it sounds like, from this past fall. And I don't know, dude. I'm glad you got it out in the air.
Well, joke's on him because I have a deer tag in Utah this year, and he doesn't. Yeah, we're heading back to the same area that we hunted in 2023. Where, to be fair, Quinn shot a deer that year and I did not. And Quinn was kind enough to pack out my wife's deer for her. So he's very helpful, and I truly do hope that he joins us in Utah for the camaraderie.
Absolutely.
Even Definitely. If he doesn't have a deer tag in his pocket.
Tell folks, it's a lot of layers to our friend Quinn here. It's a lot of layers. Well, dude, before we keep, I don't know what track we're on right here. We got to talk about what's going on with BHA, what's going on with public lands, and specifically what's going on. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on right now between stuff going on at federal level. We've got some stuff going on in state. There's some events coming up that you and I will both be at. Where do we begin, dude? Let's start with the federal stuff, right? That's what's on everyone's social media feed, in everyone's email inbox, you know, coming across everyone's screens. What a mess. I'm getting pretty sick of old Utah Senator Mike, whatever the hell his name is. And it's Mike Lee. That's what it is. Yeah. I wanted to call him Mike White. I don't know why.
Mike Lee.
Like an old quarterback or something like that. I don't know. Mike Lee. Dude, can you shed a little bit of light on just kind of what's going on? And like, I guess where we're at in the stages of this whole big, beautiful bill thing that the sale of public lands is lumped into right now.
Yeah. And I'll tie it back into our previous conversation, you know, nice little segue that all of these activities and experiences that we were just talking about happen on our public lands and waters. Everything I do is on public lands, whether it's in Wisconsin, Colorado, Utah, not Illinois, because who goes to Illinois? But, you know, any other state, we recreate on these public lands and waters. And there seems to be a resurgence of this push to privatize, to some extent, these public lands. This really popped up a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, with the reconciliation bill that was introduced in the House. The reconciliation bill being essentially the federal budget that the House and the Senate have to pass to fund the government and appropriate resources within our federal government. Some representatives had introduced language in the House bill to sell off a large chunk, I mean, relatively speaking, I think it's a pretty large chunk, of land in Utah and Nevada. The issue with that we saw is the sale of the public land via the House reconciliation bill goes around an existing established legal process that we have in the U.S. government for the sale and disposition of federal public lands. There has been this process for years. It is how we sell public lands, which, by the way, it happens. It happens all the time. They're constantly purchasing and selling different parcels of public land, but it goes through a review process. Multiple stages of review, different stakeholder inputs, and even public input. But by introducing this language into the House bill, it would go around all of that process. And there's no public input outside of, okay, maybe I just won't vote for this guy, my representative, next time he's up for election. That's the disturbing part of what was introduced. That would also set a precedent then that, oh, Congress can just go sell public lands to fund certain bills, appease whatever campaign donations they're getting. You know, hey, I want you to sell me this 100,000 acres in Idaho so that, you know, and I'll give you campaign contributions in return. Like, that precedent is very dangerous from an American political system perspective. And that's really what I react to when it comes to the sale of public lands. That language in the House bill was not the only thing that a lot of organizations are freaking out about. There were a couple different items in there relating to environmental regulations, energy development, a number of different things that were packaged into this, you know, 1,000-plus page bill. But what I really come back to is the sale of public lands. One, going around the established process that we have. And two, when I think about public lands, I think about those lands as it's not necessarily owned by the government. It's not the feds that own it and are allowing me to use it. It's the people of the United States own these lands, and they're being managed by the federal agencies. We own the land. We are public landowners. Every citizen of this country owns that public land. So by selling off that public land, removing it from the public trust, you're removing the benefit of potential recreation from the masses and applying it to whoever buys it. A millionaire, oil company, whatever it may be, you're removing the democratization of those public land assets and privatizing the benefits of that public, of that now public land. You're privatizing that into a smaller group. Fundamentally, that's where I have issues with selling public land. Fast forward a little bit on the House bill. The sale of public lands was removed from the House bill, but then it goes over to the Senate. The Senate is where our buddy Mike Lee reintroduced some language for the sale of public lands. again, same topic of getting around our processes of sale and disposition of public lands. I'm not about it. The topic of sale of public lands is often intertwined with energy and resource, like energy development, resource extraction, whatever it may be, whether it's oil, gas, minerals, logging. And I think that is something that we have to recognize as conservationists, as hunters, fishers, whatever. These public lands are managed for multiple uses. One of those uses is hunting. One of those uses is fishing. Resource extraction is another use that we have of these lands that, that the agencies are mandated by law to manage for. We have to recognize that, you know, hunting and fishing is not the only thing that I do, right? We're sitting here on computers that are powered by electricity with copper wiring running through our entire houses, our entire lives.
I tend to.
Pierce, do you enjoy electricity?
Makes the podcast a little easier.
Yeah, I do too. I really enjoy hunting and fishing. I also really enjoy my everyday life. Those two things are not completely separate from each other when it comes to the management of public lands. And I don't know what the right answer is, but we do have to start having this conversation around multiple uses and how do we, on a macro level, manage our public lands with the recognition of I need electricity. To generate that electricity, I need to generate power, whether it's through natural gas, coal, nuclear, which is my preferred option, by the way. But mining, these are legitimate points to make, and we have to understand my hunting and fishing use is not the only benefit of these public lands. These public lands, like in Wyoming, where you have oil extraction, that oil is going all over the country for people to, you know, it's getting refined and people can run their cars off of this gasoline. It benefits everybody, right? And I'm not saying every single acre of public land should be used for resource extraction by any means. I'm saying we need to have these trade-off discussions. But it comes back to the idea of the democratization of those public lands, is that it's benefiting everybody. If an oil company wants to come in and lease public lands for oil extraction, not only do they have to go through the environmental assessments to make sure they're not, you know, going to be polluting the environment, they're going to be cleaning it up, all of those kinds of things. I'm not even going to get into that yet. But the oil company is paying the government to lease those lands. That land is now generating revenue for the government, helping fund our, you know, federal government budget, and effectively offsetting that burden for the people of the U.S. If I take that same piece of land and I sell it to a private company, that oil company isn't paying the government to lease that land anymore. Yeah, I mean, you're going to have the same tax revenue from a government perspective regardless, but I've now privatized that oil and gas lease to a private company, and the public is no longer financially benefiting from that. All of that being said, like, this entire complex equation in my head makes the most sense when we have the land ownership with the people of the United States. And that's where Mike Lee and I really diverge is he wants to privatize the land. He wants to do a quick sale of this asset so we can get some quick money, fix a little bit of the budget, but we lose that sustainable revenue stream mm-hmm. from those lands as the people of the U.S. And that's a one-time fix for an asset that can generate, you know, what literal revenue or, you know, enjoyment of recreation on those lands. We're cutting off that future by selling it, and we're removing the democratization of that asset. So that's fundamentally where we see this breakdown coming through between at least myself mm-hmm. and some of these elected representatives that we have. That, again, is my kind of personal assessment on the larger issue. Everybody is going to have their own nuanced opinion. There are tons of resources out there for you to give your feedback to right. certain elected officials or even organizations and say, well, this is how I see it. I don't have any solutions. Dude.
And I really appreciate you laying that out.
I just
want to
have
that.
Conversations. And,
I mean, I think if anything, it highlights how nuanced of a problem it is. Because depending on where your public land's at, I mean, shoot, we've got national forest land here up in northern Wisconsin that used to get logged back in the heyday when deer hunting up there was, I mean, pretty prime because there was a whole lot of clear cuts and a bunch of bedding cover. And, you know, yeah, you can throw in the debate of like, yeah, but there weren't as many wolves, there weren't as many bears, whatever it may be. But nevertheless, the deer had better habitat up there, right? And so, you know, you've got nuance in a whole plethora, whether you look here in our state, whether you look out west. One of the things that you'd mentioned a couple weeks ago when we were chatting, you know, was, you know, circling back to what you mentioned about, you know, if we sell off the entire, I mean, I remember the number of acres has just been, it seems like it jumps every like week almost, where at first it was 500,000 acres. Then all of a sudden it was 1.5 million. We're like, holy shit, where did that come from? And all of a sudden it's like, I think this morning I saw like 3 to 5 million up for grabs right now. It's like, if we sell all of that in one big sale or whatever, or, you know, however it divvies out or whatever, it's a one-time sale, like you said, rather than a recurring revenue source. Or even if we did lease out public lands to oil and gas companies to do their mining or do whatever, yes, I think everyone's mind jumps to the Dawn commercial of an oil spill down in the Gulf, and there's the little duckling coated in oil and everything just looks like a wasteland out there. In reality, I mean, that hasn't happened in, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, I might be speaking out of turn because I will be honest, I haven't done my research on recent oil spills here since, but, you know, it's everybody's mind jumps to the extreme, right? And one of the things that you'd pointed out when we talked a couple weeks ago was, if we were to lease that out to oil and gas companies, whatever, open up like a spot for drilling, it's only going to be a handful of acres out of that 500,000, 1.5 million, 3 to 5 million, whatever it is, right? Like when they actually do the drill site, it'll only be, say, 20 acres or something like that that's actually being drilled on site, and the rest of it's still open public land for recreation, right? And correct me if I'm wrong there. Okay.
Yeah, generally speaking, yes, absolutely. I'm not an environmental scientist by any means, right? So I can't comment on environmental impact of X, Y, and Z development, right? But we need to have that conversation around risk versus reward. Absolutely. And I agree, like, wrong place, wrong time is legitimate for certain situations. Like, this mine in this place is not the best fit. Great, I agree with that. where is the right place? Where is the right time? What I am an expert on is supply chain management. I do have degrees to prove that. And I can tell you our reliance on foreign sources for rare earth minerals, oil and gas, honestly, any resource is diminishing by the day. Like our ability to function as a country is diminishing by the day. The more we're relying on other countries, we have to look within the U.S. to see what we can do to maintain the quality of life that we have. But we need to have the conversations on how do we achieve that while still protecting the things we love. I think a great example of this, I think it's the Meat Eater episode, the TV show episode where they sage grouse hunting in Wyoming. Steve Rinella went to talk with governor at the time, Matt Mead, but they did a lot of work in Wyoming on oil and gas companies. Hey, if I need to develop an acre here for resource extraction, what are you doing to offset that elsewhere? How are you maintaining a net neutral position or even expanding some of our conservation efforts? That's more the conversation that I want to have. Not no to every opportunity to mine or log or whatever that comes up. Which, by the way, it is hilarious seeing how some people are anti-logging now, when like 2-3 years ago, everyone seemed to be on the same page. They're like, oh, you know, healthy forest management, we should probably log. But when one party decides this is what we should do, the whole country can't have a reaction to that party bad, I need to oppose no matter what. Let's have some nuanced conversations here and understand, how do we utilize resources, whatever they may be, for the greater good, and maintain that balanced equation? So if we need to develop a piece of land here, where can we offset that? How can we benefit the environment on a macro scale? And let's keep it in the public hands so that everybody's benefiting from this. You know, I would much rather have companies leasing public land for resource extraction, where we as the public can have some sort of governing authority over them through, you know, the EPA, the Department of the Interior, whatever it is. Like we have a framework to manage these companies and their impact on our public lands. I don't have a damn thing to say what my neighbor does in his backyard on his private land. So again, coming back to that, like, shared democratization of public lands, like, that's what we need to maintain. That's the foundation that everything else is based off of. We're going to have some difficult conversations when it comes to what do we do with those public lands. But if they're gone,
yeah, exactly.
Dude, we can never have that conversation. Like,
yeah, exactly what you just said, dude. Like, if they're gone and it's all said and done, we don't get to even think about having those nuanced conversations, or, you know, getting to actually discuss what an equitable solution might even look like. But yeah, if we can continue to figure out ways to, I mean, shoot, you look, I talked to, you know, Josh Raley, the former host of this show. He's down in Georgia, where they've got nothing but these generational pine plantations, like, all over the place. And it's just, it takes 15 to 20 years for all those things to regenerate. But that, I mean, that's like, you know, family, you know, generational properties and farms and stuff down there. I mean, that's basically grandpa's, like, present to his grandkids, essentially, is, hey, by the time you're older or old enough, like, these suckers will be ready to harvest and you guys will be able to make a pretty penny and hopefully set yourselves up well. The same kind of thing can apply to the government if we're planting trees, if we're logging our own trees. And in turn, I mean, we've seen how much damage and devastation there's been with all the wildfires and everything. It's all due to, but I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it's all due to essentially an unmaintained forest, right? Like, it's a lot of understory stuff, a lot of dead trees, a lot of stuff that's fallen on the ground that is basically just turning into big tinder piles that fuel these fires and all that. If we're able to, you build houses out of trees that are harvested in our own country, rather than, I think, like, the majority of our wood that we've been getting is coming down from, like, Canada or something, or it was, I think. If we've got all these forests and everything, and we can, like, log them in a responsible manner, that we're not going to totally wipe things, and have it be looking like a barren wasteland, but, do things in segments in, put back what we take out kind of deal, right? Take care of the place that takes care of us. I mean, there's no reason that we can't find some sort of a solution down the road here. But again, if all those lands are private, we don't get to even think about it. So.
Yeah. And I think I need to preface everything with, all of our resource extraction needs to be done in a responsible manner, right? By no means am I advocating for the clear cutting of the entire Shequamig and Nicolet National Forest. That is absolutely not my position. I do think we should responsibly log portions of the forest, have our foresters come in and say, yes, this area, I need to thin out these species of trees so that we can allow for new growth, new growth of aspens. That's going to give bedding cover for, in a couple of years, it'll give bedding cover for deer. It's really going to help the grouse, right? Grouse love our high stem count, young aspen stands. By the way, if you cut down a tree, all of the carbon that it sequestered over its life is stored in that tree. It only gets released back into the atmosphere if you burn it. But if you cut down that tree, all of that sequestered carbon over its life is stored. And now there's a new tree coming in that is going to sequester more carbon in its early life as it grows quicker, but that carbon sequestration starts to drop off as you get further in time in the maturity of the tree. So, environmentalists, if you want to sequester more carbon from the atmosphere, let's cut down some trees. And to reference Joe Biden, the clip, grows the economy. It's good for the economy. It's good for the economy. I'm all for that, but I'm, again, not an expert on any of these sustainable practices, but we have input into that when it's on public lands. I don't have input onto that somebody's private forest.
The economy, it creates more jobs. It supplies us with our own domestic source of lumber and, it keeps things churning. Well, dude, we've been talking about stuff going on at the federal level. We've kind of touched on things going on here in Wisconsin. What should be on folks in Wisconsin's radar with things going on right now? I know we had the spring hearing a couple months ago now. I don't know how it's already been a couple months, dude. This spring has just flown by. But spring hearing, not that I was expecting a whole lot of change, but I noticed it was almost... It felt like identical to the questionnaire that we saw last spring, from what I could tell. Wasn't really too much that jumped out at me or anything. A lot of things approved, and I think I want to say like only two or three were rejected, I guess, whatever, by the Conservation Congress. But a lot of things that they're being pushed forward to advance. One of the things that was encouraging to me was the different fishing regulations, but specifically on different, a given specific lake or a body of water or a river or watershed, whatever it may be. That was super encouraging to me. I got excited about that because there were, I'm not gonna lie, there were some trout streams in question there that they were talking about tweaking the regulations on, and I thought about them, and they're ones that I have spent quite a bit of time on, and they could definitely use a little bit of harvesting. So, I don't know. That piqued my interest. Was there anything that jumped out to you this spring, or anything that's really been on your radar going on here in Wisconsin?
The spring hearings, I don't think anything huge jumped out at me. Granted, I haven't been as close to it. I think the important piece to remember with the spring hearings is that it's our opportunity as residents mm-hmm. of Wisconsin to voice our opinion. Whether you want to submit a question for the spring hearing to see how other people think about it, or vote on proposals statewide and in your county, that is our mechanism to give direct feedback to Conservation Congress, the NRB, and the DNR. And I think that's very powerful. I think we're one of the only
states
that has something like that. And yeah, everybody should, the only state. Yeah. So great opportunity for us to get involved and try to shape things. Cause I remember last year there was a bunch of questions on wake boats, and I can't remember if there was anything this year that returned, but I did see very recently that like Vilas County or something like that, or local townships within the county, started banning wake boats on certain bodies of water. And this kind of comes back to my earlier theme of let's make our voice heard in the public forums that we have and keep things in the public forums that we have. I'd rather be voting on wake boats in the Conservation Congress hearings than have my county board decide they're going to do one thing or the other with wake boats, without my knowledge or without my input. So that, I think, again, shows the importance of get involved, make your voice heard. Especially these Conservation Congress hearings, every spring they come around, they take like 5 minutes to fill out.
And I mean,
so super easy.
The spring hearing questions, it's predominantly recreation based, right? Like it's a lot of issues around hunting, fishing, ATVs, UTVs, snowmobiles, wakeboards or boats, like all sorts of stuff like that. It's less about land use, land management and stuff like that. When it comes to, kind of circling back to what we were just talking about, making your voice heard at the federal level so that these federally owned public lands, these national forest lands that we have up north and stuff like that, it's of the utmost importance to make your voices heard. Again, kind of circling back to the precedent piece, that we can't just let them do whatever they want, or the government do whatever they want with our public lands without our citizen input, right? Because these are the lands, these are the places that we're doing all these things, right? These lakes are all public. These stream beds are all public. A lot of these forests in these counties are public, right? And while yes, it's nice to be able to contribute, hey, this is what we want to do on those lands, if the lands are gone, we're kind of SOL, right? One of the things that did jump out to me though on the questionnaire was question two. It was right off the bat. It was the use of allowing the use of technology to tend to traps. I was really, really surprised that was rejected, because we've discussed a handful of times. Everyone's freaking discussed a handful of times the prevalence of technology in the outdoor space, right? Whether it be LiveScope, we did a deep dive on that last year after the spring hearings. But then cell cams, you've got more and more states are banning cell cams on public land or banning cell cam use in general. And I can see it. Anytime a state bans cell cams, I never really get that frustrated, because I'm like, yeah, I get it, because I do see that kind of you know, kind of tiptoeing the line of fair chase. If you're sitting in the office, maybe you're half an hour away from your spot or 20 minutes from your spot, and your phone blows up and you see that big buck cruising through, whatever, you can run out there. You know, maybe you're even sitting on the property, but you know, your phone goes off and, oh, the buck's over there. You wouldn't have known that had you just continued to sit there, right? But because you knew that, you got that cellular information, you're able to go make a play on that deer, in theory, and yeah, that sort of stuff. For traps, though, from a sporting and ethical standpoint, I would think, to me anyways, a cell cam over a trap makes way more sense than cell cams over scrapes, bait piles, you know, whatever it is. Obviously, we're not a baiting state for the most part, but I was really shocked that that was rejected, because in theory, it's like, okay, like, I just saw my trap go off, and now I know that I should go out and check it, which I know that, you know, guys have to go out and check, and maybe that's what they were trying to avoid, was, you know, if people are going to rely too heavily on their cell cams and be like, well, I was watching it the past 3 days, so that's why I didn't check it. But I don't know. That one jumped out at me, because that seemed, or jumped out at me, because that seemed like a logical use for cell cams. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely see the logic behind it. I see both sides, especially with our trapping regulations. There is kind of that distinction between not really public and private land trapping, but there's general mm-hmm. trapping, and then there's like the landowner nuisance trapping regulations that you can do a lot more on your private land for nuisance trapping jobs than you can general trapping season on public lands. I think if we were to see the approval of trail cams, cellular trail cams being used to monitor traps, the first place it would make sense is private land nuisance trapping. That would make sense to me. I can see the reasoning that if I'm putting traps out on public land where other people are using this land and recreating, I should be physically tending to that trap on a daily basis for dry land sets, you know, every 3 days definitely. For underwater sets. I don't know what the exact comparative measure is for other states' trapping regulations, but I want to say Wisconsin is on the fairly conservative side for how often you have to check your traps. I think some states have a little bit longer intervals between check necessities than our 24 hours in Wisconsin for dry land sets. Maybe that's something we can evaluate in conjunction with the conversations around trail cam usage, but I don't know.
Sorry about that, folks. Just had a little technical difficulty go on there when everything decided to shut down on me. So sorry about that. But Alec, I interrupted you in the midst of talking about trapping and the use of cell cameras to monitor said traps, specifically for nuisance critters.
Yeah, I think given our trapping regulations, it might make sense to allow electronic monitoring for, you know, nuisance trapping jobs. I don't know, you know, what that would look like if we expanded that to all trapping, like on public land. I know myself, I haven't trapped in a few years because I'm 25, 30 minutes away from my public land, and it's been a few years since I can count on being able to go check my traps, you know, 30-minute drive each way mm-hmm. every single day. So I haven't been able to do that. Maybe if I had my own private land to trap on, I'd do it a lot more. But I don't know. I think if I was able to use cellular trail cameras, I would for monitor trapping, monitoring my traps. But I don't think I would rely on it 100%.
Right.
If I think about like any firearm that I carry, you know, out in the woods, I've got a fancy red dot sight on most of my pistols, right? I have other means by my iron sights to use that gun if my fancy electronics decide to crap out on me. I still have a backup, you know, a physical backup to be able to rely on in the case of technology failing me. I don't know how we would implement something like, if I was ever to use cell cams to monitor a trap, I would have to set it, like, for my own neuroticism, like hourly check-ins, you know, not just motion activated, but like hourly check-ins so that I can have a timestamp of every hour of the day that I've received a picture, my trap is clear and I don't have to check it. And if I'm not getting that, I would have to feel motivated to go out to check that trap. So I don't know where the prescriptive line to draw is there, but it's, again, a conversation that we should be having.
Yeah, definitely. Beyond the note of like red dots and stuff, you know, like thermal scopes, red dots, you know, like more technology on our firearms, on our optics and stuff like that is coming into play. Do you think we ever reach a point? Now, I think you could make the argument that thermal imaging or like infrared night vision scopes are a significant step above red dots and stuff like that. Do you think we ever find ourselves in a place again where they say, hey, no more lights, no more red dots, no more no more technology, I guess, on our optics? Do you think we ever reach that place, or do you think optics are benign enough? Because you still have to make that shot. You still have to hold steady and hold that red dot on the spot that it needs to be in order to harvest that or that animal. Do you think we ever reach a point where those things start getting restricted?
So I think from a policy perspective, you know, they have to manage for both opportunity and population control, right? Like when technology starts having a population level impact, yes, we need to address it. When, you know, technologies like a punt gun back in the early 1900s, this new gigantic shotgun way back then is able to create an outsized impact on the waterfowl population, yes, we need to address that. I think crossbows are another hot topic, right? Like, is it archery? I don't even really want to have that discussion if it's archery or not archery. But based on our season structure, is the use of crossbows having a population level impact that determines we need to adjust our regulations to meet that? That, I think, is what the like regulatory and biological perspective is based on. If I evaluate it from a technology standpoint of, does this make me more efficient in, let's say, deer hunting, for example, does it make me more efficient in killing a deer? If it makes me more efficient killing one deer, I'm all for it. If it helps me making a more ethical shot, putting a better hit on the deer and ensuring recovery of that deer, let's do it. If it starts getting into the territory of pushing me beyond my boundaries, that's when I don't want to be involved with it. I don't use a Garmin adjustable bow sight, because I know with my bow sight where my physical limitations are for putting a good shot on an animal, and I have my bow sight set up to that. That's me as an ethical hunter, but if you have somebody that now has this sight that allows you to click a button and it drops the pin at 104 yards, and they're going to take that shot because the Garmin sight just adjusted it for them, that, I think, is where we start getting into the potential for regulation. Do I think lighted knocks are a technology that impacts the deer on a population level or creates incentive to do something wrong? No. I think Idaho just repealed their ban on lighted knocks, but certain technologies, like, again, if it makes me more efficient in my harvest opportunity, like if I have that harvest opportunity and it makes me more efficient in recovering that animal, I'm all for it.
Yeah, definitely. I hadn't heard anything about Idaho trying to ban lighted knocks. If anything, I feel like lighted knocks are, I mean, one of the most benign pieces of technology that you can have that, if anything, is going to make you more informed, in theory, make you more informed of where you actually hit that animal and hopefully lead to a better recovery of that animal, I would think. That's interesting. I don't know why they,
well, they
would ever try and get rid of that.
They had banned it. In 2022, they reversed the ban. So they, in 2022, started allowing the use of lighted knocks and mechanical broadheads for archery equipment. And I don't know what the regulatory history is behind that, but I think it was grounded in, like, no technology is the foundation. And anything that comes along is just captured by that no technology blanket rule. So that, you know, coming back to your point, I don't think we can have a blanket rule on technology as a whole. Like, what is the technology? What is it being used for? And how does it impact the resources that we have? That's what we need to evaluate. I think thermal imaging on drone scouting is totally different than a thermal imaging scope that legal hunters are using for coyote hunting. They're not, you know, if you're walking around the woods with a thermal imaging scope looking for deer, you're already breaking a law by walking around the woods with a gun looking for deer after shooting hours. Like, the thermal imaging doesn't have anything to do with that. I don't think banning thermal imaging across the board gets us the result of, like, less poaching on deer. I think poachers are going to poach. Let's combat the poaching, not the tools that they're doing it with. But that's, again, just me, just Alec, that's saying that.
That makes sense, man. Dude, last week we talked with state game bird ecologist Taylor Finger about all sorts of things regarding game birds. One of the biggest things, parts of that conversation was discussion on what it would actually take to get a sandhill crane hunt here in Wisconsin, the nuance of that issue, and how you manage a species across a flyway and deal with allocating tags across multiple states, as well as what your actual success rate is. And, you know, we kind of reached a consensus, and I'm speaking from my own interpretation of the data in our conversation, not necessarily Taylor's, but it seems like we could pretty easily have a sandhill crane hunt. And I believe Taylor even said, say everyone were to punch their tag, we probably wouldn't even have a 1% impact on the sandhill crane population. So from a population standpoint, there's no significant impact, as you said, where are we at with any efforts to, I guess, given that the spring hearing's over with and everything, do you have any updates for us on where things are at with, you know, the seemingly never ending push to get a sandhill crane hunt in place?
Yeah, well, we do not have a sandhill crane hunt as of today. Mm-hmm. So don't go outside and shoot your neighborhood sandhill crane. That is a bad idea, and you will get in trouble for it.
Yep.
There has been legislation introduced to the Wisconsin Assembly for a sandhill crane hunting season. There's a lot of other stuff that comes along with that, with funding for ag damage and was it Avapel, mm-hmm. yep. whatever the repellent for crops is. A lot of intricacies with that. But from a process standpoint, the bill has been introduced to our legislature. So the bill will have to be passed by our legislature. So we have the opportunity as Wisconsin residents to call, email, send a letter to your state representatives within our Wisconsin state legislature and let them know, hey, I'd really like this. We'll then have to go to the governor's office for approval. I do think the governor has previously indicated maybe not as much support in favor of a sandhill crane hunting season as you or I would have. But I do think it would be helpful for people to make their opinion known to the governor's office as well.
Mm-hmm.
We should have some pint nights, BHA pint nights coming up this summer, where we'll talk a little bit more about sandhill crane, how you can make your voice known to your elected officials and take action on that. More info to come on some of those events. We've teamed up with the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association as they're kind of leading the charge on these sandhill crane bills and testimonies in front of legislature. So there's a lot of people coming together to try to get this passed. We're remaining hopeful, but there's still a lot of work to be done. So it's going to be very important for us to speak up soon and let our legislators know, I want to shoot a ribeye at this guy, and I don't want to have to drive to Minnesota to do it. Why do the Minnesotans get something fun that we can't have? It should be the opposite, you know?
Yep.
So we can't let Minnesota beat us in anything. So let's see what we can do to get it done here in Wisconsin.
Absolutely, dude. Yeah. I mean, like anything, it's an issue that has a lot of nuance, as just about everything is that we've talked about here today. But dude, yeah, I mean, you've plugged a couple of things there that I definitely want to highlight. The first one being the Wisconsin, well, on the note of waterfowl here, the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association is having the Wisconsin Waterfowl Expo up in Oshkosh at the Sunnyview Expo Center, August 22nd and 23rd. I want to say it's the third week of August, third weekend of August. But we talked with Bruce last year. Might have to get him back on to get a little waterfowl update from him and those and his team. But phenomenal event if you're a waterfowler, if you're somebody who's even looking to get into waterfowling. I know they give away a bunch of guns at different raffles. There's like duck calling contests, there's decoy contests, there's dog training stuff, there's a whole plethora of things. And it's fun for the entire family. So folks looking for something fun to do in August, definitely check that out. Alec, you plugged some pint nights that we have coming up that are in the works, I believe. We'll get more dates out here shortly with those. At the end of July, there is the Beast Mode Archery Challenge going on outside of Mount Horeb out at Tyrol. For all of you bow hunters or archery enthusiasts, it is a fantastic event. Our buddy Brian Austin, who was on the show last year, hosts this thing. It's basically a Midwest-sized total archery challenge. It is phenomenal. There's three courses, I believe, as well as the regular scramble stuff at the bottom of the hill where you can just, you know, shoot 3D targets and all that. But BHA will have a booth that you and I are going to be at over the course of that weekend. So be sure to swing by there, say hi to folks, and have a little fun out there too. I'm hoping, I know you've got an NRS or a PRS match that Saturday, so we might miss you then, but hopefully we'll be able to, you, me, and Brock can hit the course again this year and maybe seal the deal on that 131 yard bison shot or whatever it was last year. That was
hey, I've been putting
in hen ringed, so I don't know.
Yeah, what... I've got the picture proof for it.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been putting in a lot of work with my bows, specifically with my 6.5 Creedmoor caliber bow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of my backup bow, you know, and
yeah, of course
that 6.5 Creedmoor arrow setup is really deadly. So mm-hmm. I've been putting in some good work there, but it might be time for me to start dusting off the old Matthews as we're getting a lot closer to deer season than I'd like to admit.
Yeah, dude, I'm right here in the same boat with you. I haven't touched mine since December, I think. And it just dawned on me after I saw one of Brian's posts that we're like 6 weeks out. I was like, I should probably start messing around in the backyard before I start slinging 60 plus yard bombs at antelope targets. What was the one last year that I just whiffed? It was like a cheetah or something like that, or a lion, but it was such a evil position for a target, just in the middle of a wide open prairie downhill, where if you lose that if you don't hit foam, that arrow is gone. So I lost one there. That was kind of a bummer.
Definitely a challenging course and very good at identifying where do we need to put some more work in.
Yep, absolutely do. But also a big confidence builder as well. You know, like when you do hit home on those 48-yard shots or those 63-yard shots, you know, whatever it may be, and you land it right in the vitals where you want it, it's kind of like, huh, I guess it does work.
I have never felt more confident smoking a yearling buck at 12 yards than I did after a season of shooting 3D with you and
right?
You and Brock, you know? I can't get any better than that.
Exactly. Exactly, man. And on the note, one final thing, this is very much in the works. As we're recording this, I just put out a little feeler on social media trying to do a poll and get a feel for where most of our listeners are coming from in the state right now. I believe the southern part of the state has a pretty significant lead. But with our good pals over at Onyx, I'm in the process of organizing what I'm planning on being a really fun little season kickoff e-scouting workshop. I'm going to try and get our good buddy, Mr. Jacob Sklenner, down here. I might see if I can get a couple other familiar names from the show that you all know. We're going to try and, I'm thinking, maybe try and get something going maybe around the Madison area, just as kind of a central location for folks. And we'll have free food, free drinks, and a whole lot of good information and camaraderie coming out of that event. So be on the lookout for that. I'll keep you updated every single week and put stuff out on social media as well. But that's in the works probably around mid to late August, right before archery season kicks off. Alec, you might even be attending there and doing a Western scouting little seminar for us as well. So very excited for that. Stay tuned, folks. We'll have more information regarding all that stuff coming up here. But Alec, dude, we've been running for just over an hour here now. Really much longer than that, given my technical difficulties. But dude, anything we missed or any final thoughts or things to leave folks with before we wrap this one up?
No, I think follow Wisconsin Sportsman on Instagram and whatnot, because Pierce does always try to share important things going on with BHA. So he's a great point of connection between all of the million things that are going on in the world right now. So first follow Wisconsin Sportsman, and that will open the door up to different accounts like Wisconsin BHA and many others that you should look at following too. But it'll all coincide, you know, it'll all be with Pierce.
We try to, at least. And if I miss anything, like Alex said, Wisconsin underscore BHA, I believe, is the handle on the social medias for the Wisconsin BHA page. And folks, like we talked about at the beginning of this, if you want to take action, you want to make your voice heard, and you want to let folks know, or your state representatives or your senators know, hey, I don't think we should sell our public lands off. You can take action. You can get in touch with them by going to the backcountryhunters.org/take-action. Or if you just Google Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Take Action page, it's the first thing that comes up. That's how I found it this morning. And you can punch in, either call the switchboard, get in touch with your people there and let them know what's going on. Or you can submit emails. And, you know, it's a really, really easy directory to figure out who you need to get in touch with to speak on your behalf and oppose the sale of public lands. Just as we mentioned, there's a lot of nuance to it, and we don't get to do anything about it or even discuss it if that land is private. So I'm going to keep those public lands in public hands. And with that, folks, have a great week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
That's all for this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're at it, if you could leave me a 5-star review, I would appreciate that a ton. You can also follow along with my outdoor adventures on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at The Wisconsin Sportsman. That's also the best way to get a hold of me to suggest topics, guests, or questions you'd like me to explore on this show. Big thanks to our awesome partners, XOP, Onyx, Huntworth, Good Chance Fly Fishing, and the Wisconsin chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Please go support the brands and support this show. And if you're looking for more awesome outdoor content, go check out thesportsmansempire.com, where you'll find a ton of other outdoor podcasts. And until next time, make sure you make the time to get outside and enjoy the incredible natural resources that are ours as Wisconsin sportsmen.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.